against you will surely be ashamed and disgraced. Those who oppose you will be as nothing and perish. Though you search for your enemies, you will not find them. Those who wage war against you will be as nothing at all. For I am the Lord your God, who takes hold of your right hand and says to you, do not fear, I will help you. Do not be afraid, you worm Jacob, little Israel, do not fear. For I myself will help you, declares the Lord, your Redeemer, the only one of Israel. See, I will make you into a threshing sledge, new and sharp with many teeth. You will thresh the mountains and crush them and reduce the hills to chaff. You will winnow them, the wind will pick them up, and a gale will blow them away. But you will rejoice in the Lord and glory in the Holy One of Israel. The poor and the needy search for water, but there is none. Their tongues are parched with thirst, but I, the Lord, will answer them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. I will make rivers flow on barren heights and springs within the valleys. I will turn the desert into pools of water and the parched ground into springs. I will put in the desert the cedar and the acacia, the myrtle and the olive. I will set junipers in the wasteland, the fir and the cypress together, so that people may see and know, may consider and understand that the hand of the Lord has done this, that the Holy One of Israel has created. Present your case, says the Lord. Set forth your arguments, says Jacob's king. Tell us, you idols, what is going to happen? Tell us what the former things were, so that we may consider them and know their final outcome, or declare to us the things to come. Tell us what the future holds, so that we may know you are gods. Do something, whether good or bad, so that we will be dismayed and filled with fear. But you are less than nothing, and your works are utterly worthless. Whoever chooses you is detestable. I have stirred up one from the north, and he comes, one from the rising sun who calls on my name. He treads on rulers as if they were mortar, as if they were a potter treading the clay, who told of this from the beginning so that we could know, or beforehand so that we can say, he was right? No one told of this, no one foretold it, no one heard any words from you. I was the first to tell Zion, look, here they are. I gave to Jerusalem a messenger of good news. I look, but there is no one, no one among the gods to give counsel, no one to give counsel when I ask them. See, they are all false. Their deeds amount to nothing. Their images are but wind and confusion.
Thank you very much, Tara. Please do keep your Bibles open at that page. We're going to look at Isaiah chapter 41 together. And there's the title on the screen, If the World Seems Out of Control. Isaiah 41. In February this year, the International Institute for Strategic Studies issued a report. They said the world is going into a time of greater instability as countries around the world spend more and more money on defense in response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the conflict with Israel, Hamas, and Iran. They said we're going into a dangerous decade. Then a month later in March, the World Meteorological Organization said that they were sounding the red alert to the world. Last year, records were, as they said, once again broken and in some cases smashed for greenhouse gas pollution, surface temperatures, ocean heat, and rising sea levels. Well, I wonder how those sorts of things affect you, how those sorts of things leave you feeling. Maybe you'd quite like to be like Nicky. Here he is, enjoying himself, having a very happy time in the park. None of this bothers him. He's very happy as he is, because of course as we come into the world, it's our parents who have to do all the worrying on our behalf. We're here to celebrate his baptism, but of course he's going to grow up in a world that will feel out of control. We've got the youth group with us, the 11 to 16s are with us this morning. And you are just beginning to get to that stage where you start to go and do things on your own, independently of your parents, and go out into the world. And maybe you're starting to feel some of that worry that your parents used to have to be in charge of instead of you. Now you're making your own decisions. And perhaps, for some of you, feeling some of that worry and anxiety. But what a great thing then for Nikki to grow up in a family that knows Jesus and to hear about Jesus from a young age and put his faith in Jesus. That's what he needs, and that's what we all need in a world that is out of control. Jesus can make all the difference when the world feels out of control. And the big theme from our Bible readings in Isaiah chapter 41 this morning was "do not fear." Words like that come up five times in the chapter that was read out to us. It's there in verse 10 twice. "Do not fear. Do not be dismayed." It's there once in verse 13. "Do not fear." Twice in verse 14. "Do not be afraid. Do not fear." Isaiah addressing here people who had lots to fear. People who lived at a time when their world did seem out of control. They were weak and helpless. The great events of history were causing them to suffer. There was war. They were being attacked. They lived in a little city of Jerusalem with some farmland around it. But massive great empires were traveling around conquering these places. Their own city had been defeated. The farmland burnt. They were struggling with poverty. They were struggling with oppression. Some of them had been taken away as slaves. And where they turned for comfort, some of them, is they turned back to the Bible, to their Bible. They didn't have the whole Bible as we do, but they already had the book of Isaiah. That had actually been written hundreds of years before, but it was addressed to them. They took comfort and they got help with their fears from these chapters that we're reading on Sundays at the moment, and including chapter 41. And chapter 41 gives people then, people now, four things that help us with fear, that comfort us in our fears. And we're going to look at those, each of those briefly. "Do not fear." Why? Well, because only God shapes events. In the end, God is the one who decides what happens. He controls history. He's in charge of all the outcomes. Let me read verse 1 again, page 726. Isaiah 41, verse 1. "Be silent before me, you islands. Let the nations renew their strength. Let them come forward and speak. Let us meet together at the place of judgment." This is a courtroom scene. God says, let's meet at the place of judgment. Let's go to court and meet there. God is the judge. He's speaking. Who is on trial here? Who stands before God, answering to God? It's the nations, verse 1. The nations of the world. The islands. Even if you were an Israelite and an island, the islands were far away. They were distant. They were the ends of the earth. But there is no place too far away that it doesn't answer to the Creator God of the universe. Now, we have human courts like that today. We try to have international justice. At one point, I studied international law. One of the things I discovered is you have things like the European Court of Human Rights, the International Court of Justice. The big problem, though, is that most of the time, governments just ignore them. They talk about international law when it suits them, but if it doesn't suit them, if they're found guilty of some war crime, they don't bother to show up to the hearing. They say, we don't recognize this court, we don't recognize its authority, and they just get away with it. But there is one court they can't avoid. It turns out that behind the scenes, God is watching everything. And that everyone and everything is accountable to God. And he brings the outcomes that he chooses. In this case, Isaiah is talking about the Babylonian Empire. There it is, as it looked at the time. They've conquered lots of places, including Judah. It's part of their territory. They're controlling it. But then in 549 BC, a king called Cyrus took over the Persian Empire and expanded it and expanded it. And within 10 years of that, he had conquered the entire Babylonian empire, and he'd conquered a lot more territory besides. There's the Persian Empire as it looked in his lifetime. And he is the one that is being spoken about in Isaiah 41. Well ahead of time, in advance, Isaiah says, well, who is it who brings this this leader, this ruler from the east to come and sweep away all of Jerusalem's enemies and all of the other other sort of powers and authorities? When Cyrus arrived in Babylon, apparently they were so fed up with the leaders of Babylon and how ruthless and oppressive they were. And Cyrus wasn't a believer, he wasn't a godly person, but by comparison to Babylon, he was actually quite humane and civilized. And so they welcomed him as a kind of hero that had come to liberate their city. Who was it that brought Cyrus from the east to do that? Verse 2, chapter 41, verse 2. Who has stirred up one from the east, calling him in righteousness to his service? He hands nations over to him and subdues kings before him. He turns them to dust with his sword, to wind-blown chaff with his bow. He pursues them and moves on unscathed by a path his feet have not traveled before. Who has done this and carried it through, calling forth the generations from the beginning? I, the Lord, with the first of them and with the last, I am him. God is saying, look, I'm in control of this. I'm the one who has kind of swept away these oppressors and brought in a new and different empire to take over. These are events that God controls. In fact, God says, I do this in every generation. Verse 4. Who has done this and carried it through, calling forth the generations from the beginning? I, the Lord, with the first of them, with the first generation, and with the last generation, I am he. God is saying he oversees all of world history. So if you imagine the history of the world being like a movie with some big personalities, some powerful people, a huge cast, huge armies, God is writing the script for that movie. And some of those who play a part in it may not be at all godly. In fact, many of them won't be. And he doesn't approve or endorse of what they're doing, but they all are a part of his big story and his big plan. It is a story that he controls. Only God then shapes events. And secondly, only God enters lives. Christian believers have the reassurance that that God who is in control of everything has come into our lives and cares about us and is taking care of us. And that was true for the nation of Israel in Isaiah 41. So it wasn't true for the others who didn't know God. Verse 5. The islands have seen it and fear. The ends of the earth tremble. They approach and come forward. They help each other and say to their companions, be strong. I mean, what can they do? They're afraid. They're scared. They're here reading the same headlines as everyone else about Babylon and Cyrus and so on. All they can really do is try and say positive, reassuring words to each other. They help each other and say to their companions, be strong. Verse 7, the metal worker encourages the goldsmith. The one who smooths with the hammer spurs on the one who strikes the anvil. One says of the welding, it is good. The other nails down the idol so that it will not topple. They come up with human, man-made solutions. In those days, they made little carvings, little statues out of metal or out of wood. They still do that in some parts of the world, little idol. And they say, well, let's just reassure us with this. This can take care of us. But it's no hope at all. I mean, they had to nail it to the table, otherwise it was just going to get knocked over the next time somebody walked past. It's a weak and feeble hope. All they're doing is giving each other empty words of reassurance. Perhaps you know the joke about the old man in hospital who died because he needed a blood transfusion and no one knew what his blood type was, but his family found great comfort in his final words, urging them to stay strong as he gasped his dying breath and said, be positive. We say to each other kind of empty words of reassurance, don't we? Be positive. It'll all be okay. Everything will be all right. But it's just empty. It's no comfort, really. It's no hope. That's what was happening to the islands and the nations in their fear. But different, God says, different, Isaiah says, for God's people from verse 8. But you, Israel, my servant, Jacob, another name for the people of God, Jacob, whom I've chosen, you descendants of Abraham, my friend, you see, they're called friend by God. It began with Abraham in the Old Testament. God spoke to him and called him his friend in Genesis. That is how God sees the people of Israel. Verse 9, I took you from the ends of the earth, from its farthest corners I called you, I said, you're my servant. His words to the nation, the city, you're my servant, I've chosen you and have not rejected you, so do not fear. And these words in verse 10 are wonderful words. If you only remember one sentence from today, please make it verse 10. A lot of people have memorized this sentence. We used to have it playing in our car when our kids were little, a little song for verse 10, and they would learn it, and we would drive along. One time I heard some very distressing news. I was very worried. I had to suddenly jump in the car and drive off, and I turned the engine on, and that just happened to be the tune that came on. These words, verse 10, and they speak to us in a very comforting, powerful way. Verse 10, so do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Do not fear, but God isn't just giving us empty words. He's giving us a reason not to fear. Do not fear, for I am with you. If God was going to be with Israel, then there was nothing to fear. He says, I'll strengthen you, I'll help you, I'll uphold you with my righteous right hand. When Nicky is a little bit older, I imagine, like a lot of children, maybe his brothers and sisters, he'll get to that stage where you're walking along and he really wants to be walking along the little wall that is next to you. It's not very wide, but it'd be really exciting to walk along the top of it. But then he kind of realizes that he's still a bit wobbly, and he suddenly is not so sure whether it's a good idea to be up there. But there will be a mum or dad will be there, and they will take hold of his right hand, and they will hold him up and say, don't be scared. And God takes hold of our right hand, and he holds us up, and he says, you're going to be okay because I am with you. And if that was true for that little city of Jerusalem all those years ago, it is far more true for Christian believers today. Because God has come into our world to be with us. He's become one of us. Jesus is called, in some of the Christmas Bible readings, he's called Emmanuel. God is with us. God is saying, I'm with you. I've come into your world to help you and to rescue you. And Jesus said to his friends, these words, greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends. God has laid down his life for us. He's died for us on the cross to say to us, you are my friends. He's not going to ignore his friends or forget them or reject them. We're his friends, and he's already died for us to help us. And that same God, Jesus Christ, said that he would always be with us. He said, I'll be with you right to the end of the age. He sends his Holy Spirit into our lives. And we have his presence. We have the presence of Jesus Christ with us, day by day, in our hearts, supporting us, holding us up, keeping us safe. And can I ask you, do you know Jesus Christ in that way? Do you know him in that way? It is easy to say, well, I believe the Christian faith is true, even to attend a church. But do you know him personally? Have you received him? Have you invited and welcomed him into your life? Can you say that God is with you, that he's your friend, that he laid down his life for you? Because if you can say that, there is great comfort and great help in that. He won't forget us. He won't ignore us. He won't let us down. Whatever we're facing, however hard it is, he's in our lives. The one who is in control of everything, the one who wrote the script of the movie, has actually come to be in that movie. I don't know if you know Alfred Hitchcock movies or Marvel movies with Stan Lee, who created those characters. They always like to kind of write themselves into the movie. So there'd be a moment in the movie where you'd see Alfred Hitchcock or Stan Lee, only for a moment. They'd be like a side character. But God has written himself into the history of the world as the main character, as Jesus Christ. The whole of history is divided around him. That's why this is 2024, because that takes us back to the life of Jesus. And so we can know him. And we can relate to him. We can have him in our lives. Do not fear then. Because God, only God enters lives. He shapes events, he enters lives. And then thirdly, he saves believers. He rescues those who trust in him. He saves us from death. He restores us to life. Let me read from verse 11. All who rage against you, this is, again, Jerusalem, all who rage against you will surely be ashamed and disgraced. Those who oppose you will be as nothing and perish. Though you search for your enemies, you will not find them. Those who wage war against you will be as nothing at all. For I am the Lord your God who takes hold of your right hand and says to you, do not fear, I will help you. And then verses 11 to 16, that whole paragraph at the bottom left of the page, if you're in Church Bible, page 727, bottom left, kind of about half the column, verses 11 to 16, all of that is saying that your enemies will be defeated, Jerusalem. Your enemies, those who war against you, will be nothing. And then the next paragraph, the top right-hand side of the page, top right, verses 17 to 20, that is saying that God will also deal with not only the threat from outside, but also the poverty. You remember they're struggling. Their farmland's been destroyed. They're a poor and needy people. And God is saying there it'll be as if it was a dry desert wasteland, but God will bring water and trees and life and fruit and food will sort of spring to life again. So God takes away the danger that they faces and replaces it with a paradise. And what do we learn from that? Verse 20. Chapter 41, verse 20, so that people may see and know, may consider and understand that the hand of the Lord has done this, that the Holy One of Israel has created it. That's the lesson we're supposed to take from the Bible story about Jerusalem, that it is God who does this. It's the God of the Bible who rescues and saves. The New Testament tells us how he does that. 1 Corinthians 15 verse 26 says the last enemy to be defeated is death. Jesus not only died for us, but he rose again and defeated death. And if as Christians we know that we are forgiven and accepted by God and that we have eternal life with him because of Jesus, then what else is there to fear? We know that we can't be harmed, not in a lasting way. We know that there's no danger because death is defeated. We're safe forever. We may struggle without having all that we need at times in this life, but we know that being poor and needy is not the future for us. We know that God himself brings about a new creation where we have all that we could want. And so God says to us, do not fear, I will help you. So three reasons there not to fear. Only God shapes events, only God enters lives, only God saves believers. And then finally, only God reveals truth. Only God reveals truth. So from verse 21 onwards, telling us we can trust the God of the Bible because he tells us everything before it happened. Verse 21 onwards, God calls the idols that other nations were worshipping and says, you need to answer to me in this court case. What have you predicted in advance, you idols? What have you said about the future? Which of the gods of the other nations announced in advance what was going to happen with Babylon, with Cyrus, with Jerusalem? And of course the answer is none of them. Only God. Verse 26, the bottom there. Who told of this from the beginning so that we could know? Or beforehand so that we could say he was right? No one told of this. No one foretold it. No one heard any words from you. I, God, was the first to tell Zion, look, here they are. I gave to Jerusalem a messenger of good news. That's Isaiah. I look, but there is no one among the gods to give counsel. No one to give answer when I ask them. See, they are all false. Their deeds amount to nothing. Their images are but wind and confusion. You see, it was God speaking through the Bible, speaking through the Isaiah in particular, who said hundreds of years before, he predicted that Babylon would conquer Jerusalem in chapter 39. He said that Cyrus would set them free in chapter 45. He predicted the meaning of the death of Jesus in Isaiah 53. Now, I know you have to be careful with predictions. It's easy to fake this kind of thing. If enough people make a few guesses, eventually some of those guesses will turn out to be right. There's a TV comedy we like in our house called Brooklyn Nine-Nine. One character says that she believes in her medium because the medium told her that she would meet a tall, dark stranger with the letter P in his name. And she said, oh, well, I really like, that's great. I really like the name Paul. I hope it's Paul. That night she was drunk in a bar. She turned round to a crowded room and said, anyone here named Paul? About three people put their hands up and she sort of picked the one she liked the look of and invited him over for a drink with her. It's easy, isn't it, to kind of fake predictions and to fool ourselves with kind of cheap tricks. But as you get to know the Bible, you realize it's nothing like that. It's written over thousands of years by lots of different people and different cultures. And yet it holds together as one story, one message from one God. It makes sense of our lives and our experience. It understands and explains the world better than any of the alternatives that people have tried to come up with over the centuries. It's lasted and influenced people all around the world. And it tells us beforehand the dangers we're going to face and reassures us beforehand that it's going to be okay. Jesus in Mark 13 says, don't be alarmed when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, earthquakes and famines. I've told you ahead of time, said Jesus, these things must happen, but it's all part of my plan. It turns out well. And whoever holds on in their faith in Jesus to the end will be safe. So where will you and I turn when our worlds feel out of control? Where will Nikki and Tom and Gemma turn? Well, it's a great start in life to turn to Jesus. We all need him and his words to us in the Bible. We can be safe and we can be sure because only God in the end will decide what happens. He shapes even the events of world history. God enters lives if we let him, if we'll have him. That God who is in control will be part of our life and treat us as his friend and never leave us. He saves believers from every enemy, even death. And he reveals us and tells us what to expect beforehand in his word in the Bible. So let's hold on to verse 10. Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand.